A long time ago, the first trip that I ever took, mission trip that I ever took overseas, was to the Caribbean island of Trinidad. And our objective on that trip was to establish a church in the mountains outside the capital city, Port of Spain. Incidentally, just this past week, I met a lady from Port of Spain, and she was familiar with that congregation, so it really made me feel good. But one afternoon, there was a group of us, about five, that had gone over. And one afternoon, we took a break after we'd been having Bible studies for several days, and we went to an old movie house there, just off of the big square there in Port of Spain. And there was, you remember, well, this will tell my age. You remember the song, Whatever Happened to Randolph Scott? Well, I found out what happened to him. He moved to Trinidad. We saw an old Randolph Scott movie there, Western, and we chose to sit up in the balcony. It was an old-style movie theater, and kind of funny, we spent our time watching the people rather than the movie. And the thing that struck us most about that experience was that everybody laughed at the wrong things. I mean, whenever a good guy would get shot, everybody would laugh. And, you know, we never did figure out why it was that way. There was one scene in the movie where a lady got slapped in the face, and the crowd just cheered and laughed and whistled. And I never could quite figure out what that was all about. But what you laugh at is very revealing. It tells us, it tells all of those around us something about our inner self. And by the way, perhaps surprisingly to some of us, it's also important to God what you laugh about. Proverbs 17:5 says, "He who mocks the poor reproaches his maker. He who rejoices at calamity will not go unpunished." That was Proverbs 17:5. We're in a series of lessons that we've entitled Learning to Love from Romans chapter 12, verse 9 through 21. Jesus repeatedly has taught us that the most outstanding characteristic of those who are his disciples is what? The love that we have one for another. And so we're learning how to love like Jesus learned. In this series of lessons, we're learning that loving one another involves some things that we don't always associate with love. And in this text that we're looking at this evening, verse 15 of Romans chapter 12, it says, "Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep." Ecclesiastes 3 says there's a time for everything, a season for every activity under heaven, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance. And so this lesson is about laughing and crying and what causes us to laugh and to cry. And in this lesson, we're going to be taught today this unhypocritical, devoted, zealous, serving, patient, sharing, hospitable love requires that we not live lives insulated and isolated from the lives of others, that we really don't have the right to shelter ourselves from others and keep other people at a distance. It demands that we come out from behind our walls and our fences and be intimately involved in the lives of people around us. There is nothing in our lives that God's love doesn't change and doesn't touch in our lives. And so let's look first of all at the command to rejoice with those who rejoice. Researchers at the University of Michigan found that the average child laughs 150 times a day. And the average adult laughs 15 times a day. I think I know some adults that may fall a little below the average, don't you? There are lots of reasons why we rejoice. Most of them have to do with our own good fortune. Have you noticed in life yet how few people there are that you can tell about something really, really good that happens to you? You notice that? I have this little pet philosophy, and it's my own philosophy and my own opinion, and so you're welcome to argue with me about it. But I believe that it's easier to cry with people who are crying than it is to rejoice with people who are rejoicing. Particularly if that rejoicing has something to do with really something really good that happened in your life. Because there are so few people, there's only a few people when you stop and think about it that can truly rejoice with you. Let's just say, how many people, if you really got a big raise, how many people can you tell? And they'll truly be happy for you. I dare say there's not a lot. Probably just a few. In some cases, you can't even tell your own family. Kind of interesting, isn't it? We let this world mess us up and our thinking so badly that if we're not really careful and if we're not reminded regularly, then we find ourselves rejoicing over wrong things. Proverbs 24:17 and 18, do not gloat when your enemy falls. When he stumbles, do not let your heart rejoice, or the Lord will see and be displeased. Pretty interesting, isn't it? That flies in the face of human nature, doesn't it? 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 6, love does not rejoice in evil, but rejoices in the truth. God wants us as Christians to learn to rejoice in the very best things in life. Not the things that are showy, but the things that deal with eternal salvation. Even in our process of growing as a Christian, we tend to rejoice in shallow, superficial, temporary things. You remember when Jesus sent his disciples out on what we have come to call the limited commission in Luke 10? And they came back rejoicing. You remember what they were rejoicing about? In verse 17, they came back and they said, Lord, even the demons submit to us in your name. And Jesus encouraged them not to be rejoicing about that, but to be rejoicing about something even greater than that. Verse 20, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are recorded in heaven. And you know why it's so important that we learn to rejoice about the right things? Because when we learn to rejoice about the right things, not temporary, shallow things, then our rejoicing is not dependent on circumstances. And we can truly rejoice in all things if we learn to rejoice about the right things. We can even rejoice whenever difficulties invade our life. If the source of our rejoicing, truly the source of our rejoicing, is that our names are written in the book of life, then difficulties don't change that, do they? And so we can rejoice even in times of difficulty. Peter wrote in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 8 and 9, though you've not seen him, you love him. Even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with inexpressible and glorious joy. For you are receiving the goal of your faith, the salvation of your soul. He said, that's what you should be rejoicing about. That if you have that confidence and you know that you're receiving your salvation, salvation of your souls and the goal of your faith, if you know that with security, then you can rejoice in that regardless of what happens in your life. How many of us have become so blinded by the cares of this world that we find nothing to rejoice about? We can't even be happy about things in our own life. I know some people like that, don't you? Much less being happy about things that happen in others' life and rejoicing with others who rejoice. You know, I have this picture when I think of rejoicing. One of the pictures that I have in my mind comes from a movie that was back, it's a few years old now, but how many of you remember the movie I Am Sam? Nobody? Okay, I see a few of you, I'm kidding. The movie, if you haven't seen it, by the way, you ought to see it. It's a really uplifting movie. I Am Sam. It tells a story of a mentally challenged father, Sean Penn, and his custody battle over his 7-year-old daughter, Lucy. Now, some of you might begin to remember. In the course of the movie, it's clear that Sam's love for his daughter is far healthier and more powerful than most parents could ever dream of, even though he needs assistance in rearing her. And the very last scene of the movie, after lots of struggles, shows Sam wearing a black and white striped shirt with a whistle roped around his neck. And he's refereeing one of Lucy's soccer games. And father and daughter are laughing together during the warm-up as he leads the kids in their stretches, and the whole team is caught up in this as they have fun together. And then when Sam blows a whistle for the game to start, then instead of refereeing, he runs around the field excitedly, cheering the kids on. And the parents on the sideline, they're riveted by the game, and they get into it, and they start rooting for the kids and the referee. And Lucy, during the course of the game, scores a goal. And pandemonium breaks out. You remember? And Sam is just beside himself. And he runs to Lucy and he gathers her up in his arms and he parades her around the field carrying her, and they're both laughing, following by all the kids on both teams, and they're cheering and they're in wild applause. And as the movie starts to fade, the final image captures Lucy with her arms around her dad's neck, smiling, and Sam throwing his head back, just with a heavenward laugh. Now that burned in my brain. That's happiness. And sometimes our life becomes so complicated that we lose that happiness, don't we? We just can't have that kind of happiness because we have too much stuff that's weighing us down. We have too many burdens, many of which we brought into our own life. You see, love for someone causes us to rejoice with them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. That's what love does. And it is a sweet thing to be in a fellowship with people who genuinely can rejoice when you rejoice. And then he says, weep with those who weep. And I know you've heard the story by now, the little boy, the little four-year-old boy whose older neighbor had just lost his wife, and he went over to visit his neighbor. They'd become pals. And when he went in the house, and he had just become accustomed just to walking in, then he saw the old man sitting in a chair crying. And so the little boy crawled up in his lap, and when he got home, his mom asked him where he'd been, and he said, I've been over visiting Mr. So-and-so. And she said, well, what was he doing? He said, he was crying. And she said, well, what did you say? And the little boy said, nothing. I just helped him cry. Maybe that's an illustration, something, of what the Lord meant when he said, I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Tears are a sign that you care. And one of the most impressive verses in the Bible is John chapter 11, verse 35. And most people know what that says. Shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. And you remember it because if you ever tell kids, I want you to memorize a verse in the Bible, then somehow they all find that verse, don't they? And so they come back, Jesus wept. But do you remember what verse 36 says? The next verse. It says, then the Jews said, behold how he loved him. Because tears demonstrate that you care. We're so uncomfortable with tears. Especially men, aren't we? We've been taught it. I mean, big boys don't cry, right? I mean, since we were little. And we were taught to hold those tears back. Women, I read somewhere, cry five times more than men. And they live longer too, don't they? Here is society's approach to grief management. John James and Frank Cherry, in their book on grief recovery, trace the story of a boy named Johnny. When five-year-old Johnny's dog dies, Johnny is stunned and he bursts out crying. His dog was his constant companion. He slept at the foot of his bed. Now the dog is gone and Johnny is crying. Johnny's dad stammers a bit and says, don't feel bad, Johnny. We'll get you a new dog Saturday. And in that one sentence, Johnny's dad is really offering the first two steps in society's grief management program: bury your feelings, replace your losses. Once you have the new dog, you won't even think about the old dog anymore. Later, when Johnny falls in love with a high school freshman girl, the world never looks brighter until she dumps him. And suddenly a curtain covers the sun. Johnny's heart is broken. And this time it's a big hurt. It's not just a dog. This is a person that his heart was fixed on. Johnny is a wreck. But Mom comes to the rescue this time and says with great sensitivity, "Don't feel bad, John. There's other fish in the sea." Bury the pain. Replace the loss. Johnny has steps 1 and 2 down pat now, and he'll use them for the rest of his life. Much later, John's grandfather dies, the one he fished with every summer and felt close to. A note was slipped to him in math class, and he read the note and he couldn't fight off the tears and he broke down sobbing on his desk. The teacher felt uncomfortable about it, so he sent him off to the school principal's office to grieve alone. When John's father brought him home from school, John saw his mother crying in the living room, and he wanted to embrace her and cry with her. But his dad said, "Don't disturb her, John. She needs to be alone. She'll be all right in a little while. Then the two of you can talk." The third piece of the grieving puzzle was now making sense to John. Grieve alone. So he went to his room to cry alone. And he felt a deep sense of loneliness. Let's review. Bury your feelings. Replace your losses. Grieve alone. Let time heal. Live with regret. Never trust again. How does that sound? Familiar? It's been society's answer for years. Ray and Judy Williamson's son, David, was killed in a fall at Red River Gorge. And later Ray said, "I used to wonder if I should go to the funeral home when someone had a tragedy because I always felt so awkward and I didn't know what to say. But I'll never ask again. I'll always go. It's not what you say, but it's your presence that makes a difference." We've all heard it. People don't care how much you know. Until what? They know how much you care. A time to laugh, a time to cry. This loving business is not easy. And it touches every part of our life. And there's certainly a part of us that wants to put a wall up when we've been hurt. So that nobody can touch us again. So that nobody can hurt us like that again. Both laughter and crying are times when someone is emotionally open, a time that draws people close together. 23 years ago this year, my dad died. And there was a little side story that goes with this, probably lots of them. But there was a Christian brother with whom I had had a disagreement that had driven a wedge between us. And we had avoided each other for a long time. He was several years my senior. But when my dad was in the hospital dying with lung cancer, the last several days of this process were extremely difficult, and the elders where I was preaching had told me, "Just go home and stay there as long as you need to. We'll take care of things." And during those last days, this man, who had great respect for my dad, came to the hospital. But he never came in the room, as far as I know. He just sat outside the room. He had pulled a chair up and sat in the hall outside the room. And almost every time that I walked out for a period of 3 weeks, he was sitting in that chair. Sometimes in the early hours of the morning. And he just sat in the chair. We buried our differences. He has died since then, and I'm extremely thankful. But it happened because he mourned with someone who was mourning. Learning to love is a total commitment. It's not just pick and choose. It's every single part of our life. It's not just doing what I feel like doing. It's being intimately involved in the lives of other people and opening yourself up. We're part of the family that's been born again. Part of the family whose love knows no end. For Jesus has saved us and made us his own. Now we're part of the family that's on its way home. When a brother meets sorrow, we all feel his grief. When he's passed through the valley, we all feel relief. Together in sunshine, together in rain, together in victory, through his precious name. And sometimes we laugh together, and sometimes we cry. And sometimes we share together heartaches and sighs. Sometimes we dream together of how it will be when we all get to heaven, God's family. If you're not a Christian, the greatest reason for rejoicing in all of the universe is when you surrender your will, your pride, your sins to Jesus. Let him take your sins and you take his righteousness. It's not a bad deal. Become part of God's family. And we laugh together and we cry together while we stand and sing.
My Lord has garments so wondrous fine.